Coming up on Tech News Today, is Google killing RSS? Is it just really simple stupidity? Also, Twitter might be coming out with a music app and how you can make $2 million with a Kickstarter. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, March 14th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by The Resumator. Streamline hiring and increase traffic to job postings with The Resumator, the hiring solution used by today's fastest growing companies. For a free 30-day trial and 15% discount, go to theresumator.com/TNT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, Samsung Galaxy, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show. We keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world. Put them in context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Google's changing all kinds of things. Yesterday morning, it was Andy Rubin leaving the Android team. We talked about that on the show yesterday. Last night, Google announced it will shut down its RSS reader on July 1st. The company explained that usage had declined, which sparked a petition on change.org with around 50,000 signers asking Google to change its mind. And finally, this morning, the Wall Street Journal reports Google's Jeff Huber will leave the Maps and Commerce unit to work in Google's X Lab. The unit itself will be divided with Maps going to the search department and Commerce now falling under the advertising group.
We've got a new star of YouTube, and it's Samsung's Galaxy S4. A user named iStephenCom has been posting videos, four of them in total, of what he claims is the actual device running. The first shows the device's ability to react to a user's input without actually touching the screen at all. And another video shows how the device will automatically pause a video when the viewer looks away.
Oh, yeah? You think the S4 is so great? Well, nuh-uh, says Apple's Phil Schiller. He's the senior vice president of marketing at Apple, told Reuters that the next Galaxy may arrive with a year-old operating system that will need updating. I know that's crazy. Schiller also pointed out that according to Apple's research, four times as many consumers are switching to iOS from Android compared to the opposite. Samsung's latest star, Jeremy, replied with, "I'm rubber, you're glue." But I'm just made up that last part.
Actually, that's probably not too far off. BlackBerry announced it will bring its mobile device management software to iOS and Android. Workspace for iOS and Android will be managed through BlackBerry Enterprise 10. The feature is similar to Balance on the new BlackBerry OS phones. It lets you keep your personal and your work apps and your data separate, but still just use the one phone.
The Twitter for Windows 8 app is finally live in Microsoft's Windows Store. And besides the usual features in other Twitter apps, there's Snap View to adjust the size of the app. Photos can be expanded or shown in a photo gallery. And then Share and Search lets users tweet or search from any app. Twitter Live Tiles notifications round out some of the uniquely Windows feature sets.
Say so long to ad-blocking apps in the official Google Play Store. Google booted a bunch of these apps, including AdAway and AdBlock Plus, because those apps violated Google's terms of service. The terms ban any app that interferes with properties of any third party. However, since this is Android, you ought to be able to sideload apps like this.
Samsung just may be headed to a rare U.S. patent win over Apple. The U.S. International Trade Commission delayed its decision in one of Samsung's patent infringement cases against Apple from yesterday when it was supposed to decide until May 31st. The ITC said it needed to consider the impact of an import ban against Apple devices found to infringe, which implies it's considering implementing such a ban.
Microsoft has blamed a data center that overheated for a 16-hour shutdown of its Outlook and Hotmail services, citing a rapid and substantial temperature spike that caused a large number of servers to stop working. The temperature rise had apparently been due to a firmware update failure. Microsoft is currently migrating millions of Hotmail users to the new Outlook.com service.
Hot news. Apple Insider noted that German blog iPhone spotted a new feature of Apple's iMac on the Apple Store. It's a built-in Visa mount adapter. It's kind of hard to find the model, and it costs $40 more than a regular iMac. Also, it doesn't come with a stand. That's the whole point of the Visa adapter. You can use your own stand or even mount it on a wall if you want. Wall-mounted iMac.
Cue the Rock and Robin jokes because Twitter is getting into the music business. CNET reports that Twitter will roll out a new app called Twitter Music that uses technology it acquired when Twitter bought music discovery service We Are Hunted. The app could hit iOS by the end of the month. Twitter Music would make song and artist recommendations based on who you follow and let you listen to music through partners like SoundCloud.
Tweedly D, I get it. I get the Rock and Robin thing now. Took me a second. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by The Resumator, the hiring solution for small and fast-growing businesses. If you're a business executive or if you're an HR professional, you really want your business to be working on doing the business that it is in rather than spending a lot of time trying to hire people. Everybody knows how when you have to hire somebody, it takes way too long. It's way too hard. Soaks up everybody's time. Try replacing your HR inbox or your clunky tracking system with The Resumator, an end-to-end hiring package that helps manage the entire process of hiring. Helps you with sourcing so you can attract applicants to your jobs in flexible ways. You can use your own website. You can use free job boards. You can use social media. All kinds of different ways to make it work for you. And then it helps you screen the applicants, helps you with the interview process so that you can schedule meetings and not take up too much time, not have too much confusion, and finally helps you hire the candidates. You can use it to collaborate and compare to select the best person for the job. It can increase traffic to your job postings too, as much as 500%. And it's just going to get you out of the process of hiring all the time and in the process of doing your business. So manage the flow of incoming applicants, the pre-screening process and communications all in one place. Focus on other aspects of your business and have better control of the hiring process so you don't have to hire an expensive recruiting firm. If you're thinking about doing that, don't. If you're a business owner, hiring manager, or HR professional, you want to save time, money, and increase traffic to your job postings, check out The Resumator. For a 30-day free trial and a 15% discount, go to theresumator.com/TNT. And after that free trial, their base package of $99 per month covers 5 open jobs and 5 users. And they offer other packages as well. And we thank The Resumator for their support of Tech News Today. All right. It's great to have Martin Giles, U.S. technology correspondent for The Economist, back on the show. Welcome, Martin.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's always good to have you along. I know you're about to head out to England, so we'll try to warm you up with some hot tech news before you head over there.
I really appreciate it.
Let's start. This is actually a pretty hot story. Google getting rid of Google Reader, and the internet exploded. Okay. I think it's about 50,000 people have signed a protest petition on change.org asking Google to bring Reader back. Brian Shih, a former Google Reader product manager on Quora, has a nice informative post discussing, saying, look, Google's been trying to get engineers to work on Google Plus for a long time. So this is not a surprise to him. He left Google back in 2011. And everybody who does an RSS product is now jumping to say, hey, we're the ones who are going to be able to take this over for you. Feedly announced, in fact, that they're going to clone Google's API and run on Google Apps Engine so that you have a seamless transition. Right now, if you set up a Feedly account, you can access your Google Reader feeds through the Feedly interface in a Chrome app, a Firefox app, and iOS and Android apps. And what they're saying is on July 1st, when Google Reader finally sunsets for good, they're going to transition all of that onto their own servers so that you won't even know it happened. You'll just be continuing to access those same feeds in that Feedly interface. I'm trying lots of different things, and I tried Feedly this morning. It worked great. I really, other than like things being in different places and having to get used to a different interface, it did everything I needed it to do. I looked around NetVibes. NetVibes seems a little clunky to me. I may give it a go tomorrow just to try it out. NewsBlur looks promising. I also installed something called Fever. And Jason, if you want to pull that up, this is something you have to install on your own server. But what it does is it analyzes all the links in your feeds and then gives you a temperature gauge. Now, because we had Martin on the show, I decided to make it in Celsius. So 40.5 degrees here for the Google Reader story.
I was going to say, that's pretty cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would think. but there's also a guy named Tim Atley on Google Plus tipped me off to Tiny Tiny RSS, which is an open source. This Fever is $30, and I'm not sure I love it. There's a few weirdnesses. For instance, if you go back to that screen, the story about Google breaking up the Maps and Commerce unit, the headline is The Wall Street Journal, because everybody's quoting The Wall Street Journal. That really shouldn't be the headline. But I might try Tiny Tiny RSS. That takes a little more PHP tweaking. In the end, though, you got people like Dave Weiner and Martin Arment out there, or Marco Arment out there, saying this is a good thing. Google was squashing RSS because everybody used Google Reader and we didn't have any innovation. This is going to unleash all kinds of innovation using RSS feeds. Martin, what do you think? Is this a loud but irrelevant minority of geeks? Is this just Google being myopic, or is this a chance for real innovation?
No, I think this is not a small number. I mean, 50,000 people very upset. If you're Google, you really don't want that kind of sort of bad feedback coming from the ecosystem. Now, what they're clearly trying to do is to force people into Google Plus. That's clear. In fact, there was another engineer called Chris Weatherall who basically said, look, you know, from the beginning, Google hasn't really been keen on this. And so there's never been real commitment to it. But clearly now what they're trying to do is to get people to sort of share their news in other ways, preferably through their own social network. So it's a sort of closing of the walls of the web, which you wouldn't expect to come from a Google.
I guess I understand the idea of Google saying, look, we can't do everything well. We need to focus. And what annoyed me when I first saw this story is they didn't provide a clear path. They gave us plenty of time. They said, you've got until July, but they didn't say, and here's where we're sending it. Even with Google Wave, which nobody used, they at least created an open source project for it.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And you've got to think to yourself, you know, why is Google trying to sort of basically focus on other things than RSS? When RSS is all about sharing information across the web broadly, that's what Google set out to do. But, you know, clearly they're restructuring, clearly they're changing their focus. And it's interesting that you see these executives all heading off to Google X, sort of these big moonshot things. Does that mean that the rest of us don't count anymore because it's all about moonshots?
You know, I also think there are a lot of folks who use Google Reader more than the average person, and a lot of those people happen to work in media and are writing articles about how horrible it is that Google Reader is shutting down. I also, and Leo and I are going to talk about this on iPad Today later on this afternoon, there are a lot of apps that I use that rely on Google Reader, you know, and skin it really nicely. Reader, with R-E-E-D-E-R, is just one of many examples. And we have people who write in and sort of go, but what if I don't want to use Google Reader? And we sort of go, well, that's the backbone of this whole app. You kind of have to. So I am sort of looking forward to if these apps can figure out a way to transition out of Google Reader and figure out how to replicate the experience, we might have people who are less uncomfortable with having to use Google Reader as their only solution, as the backbone.
Yeah, shutting down Google Reader, I think, I don't know if it's going to have innovation so much as copycats, because a lot of people are going to be like, hey, what's Feedly? It looks a lot like Flipboard. It's all magazine style. I want that old interface back. So in innovation, I'm expecting people to go, we're going to have to do something that looks just like Google Reader to get people to use our service, because a lot of people are going to complain about Fever or Feedly or any other service that doesn't match what they're used to. And that's going to be that first curve of people going, okay, I got to go somewhere else, but this doesn't work the way I like it. And I'm telling you, those people are going to be a very, very vocal bunch. Mm-hmm.
The one thing I've noticed in the Google Plus thread that I was in on, and it was pretty vibrant, there are a lot of people talking about it in there. Everybody uses Reader a little differently. So some people are like, well, I don't like Feedly because it doesn't show me the they call it saved in Feedly, or the starred items from Google Reader. On the, you have to go to a separate place to look at it. I'm like, well, that doesn't bother me. The interesting thing about Feedly is that I have to change the interface because I don't want that magazine-like interface. I just want lists. And there were lots of examples like that. Everybody's got a different way that they're using this, but everybody was using Reader because it was sort of all things to all people. It was integrated into Google. And now I still think we're going to see a lot of innovation. We're going to see a lot of people trying different things because they can serve a lot of different aspects of that same market. Well, Google Reader kind of stole the headlines by taking the air out of the room there and getting the geeks all angry. But the Samsung Galaxy S4 may have launched by the time you see this episode of Tech News Today. We're recording at 10 a.m. It launches this afternoon at 4 p.m. Pacific. And Sarah, that ship is leaky as a sieve. We got YouTube videos now.
Yeah, we got videos. We got pictures. If you are to believe what we've seen since the show yesterday, we've got 1080p, 5-inch display, actually 4.99. We'll just go ahead and call it 5. Got an embossed home key, crosshatch, textured black back, plastic cover. Supposedly, the publication that was actually posted some pictures in China and Gadget China translated it for us is a 1.0 gigahertz 8-core CPU, Power VR, SGX. Well, there's a lot of like model numbers here. GPU, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of ROM storage, a micro SD expansion slot, and then you got a 26 milliamp hour battery. Users, as I mentioned in the news views, can hover their fingers over to the display to produce what looks like a Galaxy Note 2 S Pen stylus-like effect. So that's kind of interesting without actually touching the screen. Something called Smart Stay for the eye tracking. That's EYE, of course, which the idea is, you know, if you're reading news and you're scrolling down and it's below the fold, the pages might follow your eyes or at least stop scrolling when you look away, that type of a thing. Well, I think is actually interesting, and this is not coincidental timing at all, in my opinion, is Phil Schiller decided to grant the Wall Street Journal an interview yesterday and kind of, you know, was trying to take the wind out of not only Samsung, but Android sales in general. See what I did there? Sales and sales. Did everybody see that?
Okay. That was
very
Phil good. Schiller, of course. Well, nobody laughed. Phil Schiller is obviously...
It was no Martin Giles pun, but it was good.
Yeah, I'm doing my best. I just want to impress Martin. That's all. That's all. Phil Schiller, who, of course, is the Senior Vice President of Worldwide Marketing for Apple, had some, you know, he's it's not exactly like we didn't already feel that a lot of Apple executives felt that Android was inferior. But he pretty much came out and said it yesterday. He said, Android users are often running old operating systems. Fragmentation is an issue. That's just something that's plain and simple in the Android world. He also says, when you take an Android device out of the box, you have to sign up to 9 accounts with different vendors to get the experience iOS comes with. They don't work seamlessly together. And then he said, and this is, you know, it's sort of to prove that, you know, devices being bigger isn't always just because bigger is better. It says, given the iPhone 5 is so thin and light, the reason that people are making their devices bigger is to get up to the battery life the iPhone 5 offers. He also says market share figures, not as important, you know, because, of course, when you look at global Android figures, they really blow iOS out of the water. And there are even reports that, you know, come end of this year, the Android tablet numbers will do the same. He says, I'm not sure that the estimates and the modeling accurately give an accurate picture of it all. He cited a survey from a research firm called ChangeWave. It said around 3/4 of iPhone users say they're very satisfied with their device compared with around half of Android users. So he's kind of saying, like, don't pay attention to those sales figures. It's all about happiness. iPhone users are happy. We have good retention numbers. Ayaz, you're sort of smirking across the table from me. Yeah. Do you think? What is his point here?
Well, I think, look, Samsung is getting a lot of press. All these leaks are getting lots of attention. I'm sure Samsung's parsing this stuff out. Like, here you go, here's some little bit of information. I'm sure they're in charge of their own leaks. But when it comes to Apple actually issuing statements like this to Reuters, and then there's this giant LG trolling ad in Times Square, this big LG ad above the Samsung Galaxy ads that say, Optimus is ready for you or something. Same style, same white and black on one side, black and white on the other. It's just, I think these other companies are just flat out scared. Samsung is doing a great job with Android. They're managing to have a really solid phone. I think once they actually had the branding right of the S3, calling the S3 on every carrier, the S4 is going to be the same kind of hit. I just think everyone's scared at this point because Samsung's got a huge part of the market.
But Martin, do you feel like it Apple going on the defensive or the offensive? It depends on which headline you read. Does it feel like they're scared?
Well, that's a great question, Sarah, because, you know, is this defensive or is this offensive? I mean, you've got a new, you know, a new pope for the Catholic Church yesterday. Today, the pope of the Android ecosystem is going to be releasing this new device. And for the first time, really, you've got a reversal of roles. You know, up until now, it's like the iPhone has always been the focus of intense speculation. And then sort of like, you know, everyone rolls all over it trying to find what's wrong with it. Now, this time, Samsung's stepping up to the plate and it's going to get intense scrutiny that used to be sort of, you know, preserve of Apple. And so, you know, it can't afford to make mistakes now. And I think what Phil Schiller's trying to do is sort of raise that sort of concern, raise those thoughts in people's minds so that we all look really carefully and try and find some faults with this new device. So, you know, it's a big shift. Samsung's outspending Apple massively on advertising for phones. There was a piece in the Wall Street Journal a little bit earlier this week saying, I think it was like spending 25% more. So, you know, those sales numbers are real and it's making real progress, but now it's in the headlights.
All right, well, I will be looking with interest towards New York at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern to see the white smoke come up announcing a new Samsung Galaxy S4. I don't know. I wonder what name it will take. Let's talk about CNET reporting that Twitter has acquired a music discovery app.
Yeah, CNET had a great report that Twitter has acquired a music service last year. It's called We Are Hunted, and it's planning to build a standalone music app called Twitter Music. Now, the app could be released by the end of the month for iOS, and this would suggest artists and songs based on which accounts you follow. And the tracks would stream via SoundCloud. There will also be an option to listen to song previews using iTunes Music Store. All Things D's Peter Kafka had more details. He says that Twitter has signed Vivo to display clips on the app. And Kafka thinks that that might be the only way users of Twitter Music can get the entire track, because Vivo has those deals and SoundCloud doesn't. And CNET had a ton of details on the actual app, saying it's Twitter branded. Launching it brings up a tour. The app doesn't require you to have a Twitter account to even use. And it's got four main tabs: suggested, now playing, popular, and emerging. Now, Peter Kafka at All Things D wondered the effect of such a service. Would it grow the Twitter user base as a whole, or will that service just segment the existing audience? Sarah, what do you think?
Well, if you're not a Twitter user and you're using the service, which is clearly Twitter branded, unlike, you know, something like Vine, which is also belonging to Twitter but has its own brand, and you are looking at music that is trending, you know, or recommended, who is it recommended by? If it's not recommended by the people that you are following, you know, or share mutual friends with on Twitter, that's what's interesting to me. I mean, I guess it could help with discovery of, gosh, I really like this random Twitter user who always seems to be suggesting songs I like. Maybe I will follow them and have a deeper connection to them outside of music.
Martin, what do you think is going to happen with the audience? Are they going to just grow, or are they going to just segment?
I think they'll just segment. I mean, it's a classic sort of attempt to try and build on success that other people have had, but I can't really see that this is going to be a massive success, to be honest.
Tom, do you think this is a lot like Facebook switching out their feeds? I mean, they have the option for news, music.
Yeah,
I think I'm confused by Twitter's approach if they do this, if they come out with a Twitter app. Is Twitter wanting to become a suite of apps the way Facebook has? Maybe that's the new trend, is to try to get your fingers in a lot of different places and then move people between your services to increase. That seems to be the idea. I do like the idea, and I don't think this sounds like a very good implementation of it, but I do like the idea of an independent service that says, we will help you to discover music at various stores. And so you can listen to an iTunes preview, you can listen to a SoundCloud preview from somebody, you can listen from all over, and then you go buy it wherever you want, because we're making our money off of in a different way. I think that's a little far afield of what this seems to be, although it's a little early to tell.
I mean, that Discover tab in Twitter is something I've been using a lot more to see what's going on in the world, because there are news sites you can check out and RSS feeds you could try with Google Reader for now, but Twitter's got a whole bunch of groundswell. If you're not a Twitter user, I could imagine that you'd go to that Discover tab and see new things from bands and artists you're not used to, and maybe then you'd want to be enticed to start using Twitter in that way. The other question was something like, would Twitter start breaking out other things? Like, will it have Twitter news? Will they have Twitter arts? Yeah. I mean, what's stopping Twitter from splitting this out entirely?
Where does it end? Will we have separate apps for everything? And I guess that's what really troubles me, is like, I don't want it to just be an app. having an app interface for it is great, but I want to be able to access it everywhere. That's actually, going back to the RSS story, one of my things in selecting a new feed reader is I don't want to be limited to a desktop client. I want to be able to access my feeds and what's read and unread and starred and saved no matter what device I'm on. That's kind of the new way. And I'm not sure that this Twitter music app will do that either. It sounds like it's just going to be an app like Vine.
Martin, do you think that this is a sign of Twitter's maturity at this point? I mean, it used to just be about what are you having for lunch would be always the gag on Twitter. But now that they've grown to be such a media powerhouse, they're like, listen, for music, we'll actually have a separate service for that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, it's been happening for the last few years. You know, you've seen Twitter sort of, you know, either acquire or launch its own, acquire apps that are out there and bring them in and brand them Twitter, or launch its own. And you can say, you know, it's a sign of maturity. I mean, I think what they're trying to do, what they will say they're trying to do, is to sort of set the bar at which, you know, other people then need to come up to and hopefully go beyond. So you're encouraging innovation in the ecosystem by actually sort of setting out a minimum, a bit like Android. You know, so Google wants its own Android devices so it can show other manufacturers what you can really do with the software. But it's a risk because you start annoying lots of people in your developer world who all of a sudden find that, you know, they're competing against the platform that they thought was supporting them.
And the other thing I'm kind of curious about is why Twitter is theoretically deciding to call this Twitter Music. I mean, Vine kept its name, TweetDeck kept its name, but if they're coming up with their own service, why call it Twitter Music or something else?
I don't think We Are Hunted really fits with the Twitter brand strategy at this point. Let's be honest. We've got people in the chat room going like, We Are Hunted, ooh, I love that service. Great, cool. But, I mean, We Are Hunted doesn't sound like music to me. I think the name change was inevitable.
I just meant another name, not necessarily We Are Hunted. But birds are hunted. Don't forget, it could be game season.
Oh, well, isn't that just a shiny little bright spot in my pie day?
I was crying for Martin there. Another stupid joke. Martin Giles.
I loved it. I'm going to leave it to you guys brilliantly.
All right, let's take a quick break. We got a few more stories to discuss, but you know, with all these new phones and things coming out, you may want to get some cash for your old stuff, and that's why our sponsor Gazelle exists. If you want a new Samsung Galaxy phone, or maybe that new HTC phone, or just a new iPhone or an iPad before you get the new one, or even if you've already upgraded and you got the old one still sitting around, make sure you sell your used phone or gadget to Gazelle for cash. Don't give away or bury last year's gadget in the garage or a drawer somewhere. Find out what it's worth at Gazelle today, and you can lock in that quote for 30 days because the prices of these old gadgets don't go up, they go down. So lock it in. Gazelle is really nice about saying, like, you ask for a quote today, we will honor that for a month. Go to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Find your item. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. Get you a little money for them at least. And get a risk-free offer for your gadgets. Gazelle locks in that quote for 30 days. And you'll get paid fast by check or PayPal. So go get an offer for your iPhone, your Samsung phone, your HTC, your BlackBerry, other Apple products, your iPad. And do it today because your gadgets may lose value every day that you wait. What's your iPhone, iPad, or Android smartphone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Sell your used iPhone or Samsung Galaxy smartphone today at gazelle.com. Let's talk a little bit about this BlackBerry plan we mentioned in the news feed called Secure Workspace. The idea, and lots of people are working on this sort of thing. There's a move from Samsung that's similar, Samsung for Enterprise. They also have Samsung Safe and Samsung Knox, where you can not have to carry two phones. Lots of people carry two phones. In fact, my wife just got to the point. She's like, you know what? I'm just going to carry two phones. It's too hard to have the same phone, the same number for everything. So what Secure Workspace for Android does, and for iOS, is allow you to use your BlackBerry Enterprise server, if you're already on a BlackBerry Enterprise server, and allow people in the workplace to keep their Android and iPhone phones, but have a secure area where their corporate mail, their corporate calendar, their corporate contacts and memos are all available but separated without having to make people use a VPN. Now, this seems very smart for BlackBerry to say, look, we really would like you to just buy the BlackBerry with BlackBerry OS 10 and use Balance, which is exactly that same thing. But we know that not everybody's going to do that. So rather than have you switch off to one of these competing services like Samsung's providing, we're going to open up BlackBerry Enterprise Server to these other platforms. And then maybe once you get used to running it that way, people see that Balance is superior. Maybe they'll buy BlackBerry phones. Maybe not. Do you think it's a good strategy, Martin?
I think, you know, it's an inevitable strategy. They have no choice, really, for the reasons that you were outlining very clearly earlier on, Tom. I mean, they need to boost sales of the new devices that they're rolling out. And they know that bring your own device to work is a massive trend, the sort of consumerization of the workplace where we all use our own domestic devices for work too. So here, what you've got is you've got your reputation as being the safest game in town when it comes to corporate handling corporate data. And what you're saying is we can bring that reputation and help you allow your employees to use, you know, devices for dual purposes while at the same time keeping, you know, your data safe. And we're, you should trust us more than you should trust any of these newbies. I mean, Samsung, come on, they just do all Android phones and they give them to anybody. How can you trust them? So that's the game that they play, and they really don't have a choice.
And they want to keep those subscription revenues from declining, which is going to happen if fewer people are using BlackBerry and fewer people want to use BlackBerry Enterprise Server. Sarah, do you think this is something that a lot of workers will embrace, that they'll say, oh, yeah, I won't do two phones. I'll be able to keep my own phone.
Yeah, you know, I was I met a couple of people over the weekend. I was on vacation that were rocking the BlackBerries, and I was like, oh, cool, yeah, so... What do you, you know, not like, you know, there was no sort of like, I'm making fun of you, but just like, what do you actually use that BlackBerry for that, you know, I couldn't do, you know, on my iPhone, for example, because they were sort of like, oh, iPhones are nice, but can't work on them. And it was exactly for this reason. It's like, I got to do work. It's enterprise stuff. You simply can't run this sorts of, you know, the software securely. And so that, you know, the iPhone is a great consumer device, but I'm not going to have another phone. So if you can get these folks, and I guess some of these folks are, I don't know, in small businesses where they just kind of had, like, the word of mouth has to get out that there are other options with BlackBerry 10, but also people who are running enterprise where there's that much more of a reason to bring your own device. This is a really good move for BlackBerry. I mean, you want people to be using BlackBerry, period.
It's like hedging their bets. The flat-out thing is they're banking on BlackBerry 10 to be a savior, the Z10, the Q10. But if they can't make that work, having a service that other popular devices are using, that makes a lot of sense because it might just be that little gateway where you're like, hey, this is actually pretty good. I want to try out a phone made by these guys. Same thing with Google apps that are all over iOS. You're like, these work pretty well. I'd love them to be my default. And then these people move over to Android. So if this kind of thing can bring over like a halo effect, I think it could be very, very successful for BlackBerry.
Yeah, I think this is a necessary strategy. And I think one that BlackBerry's tried to minimize because the company formerly known as RIM wants people to think that the BlackBerry phones they make are going to come back because that's their best pathway to success if they can make that work. But this is really what they should be doing to hedge their bets. It's like, well, if it doesn't work and we still remain a minor hardware maker, we can be a service provider because we're better at this than anybody else. Let's figure out how to make $2 million with a Kickstarter. What do I need to do, Sarah?
Well, first of all, you have to have Kristen Bell on your team.
Okay, got her in the closet.
Great. Good. And then you have to have
Rob Thomas. I used to drink with him in Austin. I don't know if he remembers it. I barely remember.
But he's not the singer. In fact, that's exactly what his Twitter bio says.
So not a Rob Thomas, but the Rob Thomas of the creator of Veronica Mars.
That's correct. Right. So the big story for a lot of Veronica Mars fans yesterday is that there was a Kickstarter that was put together by Rob Thomas with the support of the actors of the Veronica Mars series that has been canceled for some time now. Who said, listen, I wanted to make a movie back in 2007. It was not something that I could achieve. There wasn't enough interest. Warner Brothers, who owned the rights to the show, didn't want to do anything with it. So we've sort of been sitting on this idea for a while. So I went to the executives at Warner and said, what if we can prove that there's enough of a demand for a movie? If we can figure out how to make that happen, will you reconsider? The folks said, yes, we will. And they had decided on if they could raise $2 million in a Kickstarter to fund a Veronica Mars movie, then Warner Brothers would basically, you know, give it not only the, you know, the blessing of the rights, but some support. So this was actually the fastest growing Kickstarter project ever, meaning that it got to $1 million in funding in just 4 hours. It got to $2 million in less than 10 hours. At this point, we're closer to $3 million, and it's probably going to hit that, I don't know, midday or so at this point. So it's about $2.7 million.
Wow.
And it's really interesting. Rob Thomas says, Kristen and I met with the Warner Brothers brass. They agreed to allow us to take the shot. They were extremely cool about it. Their reaction was, if you can show there's enough fan interest to warrant a movie, we're on board. So this is it. This is our shot. I have to say right now, I have never seen Veronica Mars. I know that it is a cult classic, though. There are a lot of people who are really, really excited about this. And I love the idea that as long as there is enthusiasm and people supporting the cause, you can get like stuff like this to get pushed through. Although $2 million in funding, you know, it's going to have a lot more than that by the time the Kickstarter project is over, which I believe ends on April 12th. It doesn't mean that the movie's a done deal. You know, there's schedules to consider and what are you going to pay the actors and what's the budget going to look like? And is Warner Brothers going to tie things up, even though that they say this is all a great, great idea? And then you've got kind of cool funding perks for the people who have supported the show. You know, it's the Kickstarter model. So there's things like you might get an on-set visit or you might get a PDF of the shooting script or a digital version of the film. Here's my question, though. So you got Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers is in the business of making movies, and they make movies based on how successful the movie's going to be, right? It's a very simple model. Warner Brothers says, yeah, we don't want to give you any money. So, and a petition, let's say, wouldn't be enough. You know, if you can get 3 million people to sign a petition saying, bring Veronica Mars back, that's not good enough for us. We want it crowdfunded. And the folks who are involved in the project even say, listen, for every dollar that we go over the $2 million that we asked for, it'll just go into making the production better. We can put more resources to the production. But why is $2 million not enough for Warner Brothers then to actually give it an actual budget? They have the money. These are the people who have money for these sorts of things.
I mean, it really comes up to if Warner Bros. Wants to put this much assets in a property that's been dead for years. The fact that the $2 million was raised, or over $2 million, is, I think, way better than any petition could ever do. Because even if you had millions of signatures, these people are putting money where their mouth is. They're saying, we want to see this movie. We'll actually pay for it ourselves. Warner Brothers still has to figure out who else is going to fund this movie. Because these stars are going to be hard to get. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to promote this. The marketing costs are really, really expensive. So I'm just curious if people will want... I mean, if it's one thing if a group, it's a cult. I've watched Veronica Mars. I watched the whole series on DVD. I would like to see this movie, but I would probably wait for it to show up on disc because I don't need to go see this in a theater. I'm not sure what the theater experience would add to this. I just don't know if that's enough to bring people in on the in mass, because it was a television show. And if that can draw people in for free on air, what's going to get people into a theater?
Yeah, but it's a cult hit. And so you're going to get people like making a big deal about this because it was the Kickstarter movie, because they gave money to it. They're going to tell all their friends. And Sarah's right. For Warner Brothers, $2 million is a drop in the bucket. That doesn't do anything for their budgeting process. But what it is either them saying, we want to see if fans are really serious, or an executive at Warner Brothers that just lost a bet because he thought, yeah, you could raise $2 million on Kickstarter. Sure, we'll greenlight it.
I'm sure that's right. But you've got to love a project that has a letter from Veronica Mars. I have to say, I don't know who she is. I haven't seen the film. But that begins, dearest marshmallows, I am currently the happiest blonde in a hamster ball the world has ever seen. Now, if that's not a great pitch for $2.7 million, I don't know what is.
XOXO.
I don't know. I guess it's the next level of petitions, right? I mean, a bunch of people saying, I want to see this, is that's easy to do, right? Well,
didn't some, like, some...
That's Google Reader level stuff.
What were the fans of Jericho sending in to CBS to save the show?
Peanuts.
It's the fact that people were sending in things that made people realize at the studio, they're serious.
Peanuts?
Yeah.
Well,
all kinds
sorry for all those executives with allergies.
It was
the EpiPen handy.
That's why they gave it another season. They were like, please.
Stop sending
us peanuts. You're literally killing me. I have a nut allergy.
We can have a re-Kickstarter for Google Reader. To bring back Google Reader.
Because nobody's
$5 million, will Google do it?
Because nobody's allergic to money. That's why Kickstarter's working and peanuts
didn't. When you give your money to something, you feel more like you have a stake in it, even if it's only a buck or $5. There's tons of psychological studies about this. So it's... You know, for whatever the motivations are, it's not a bad idea. Let's talk a little bit about what, I don't know if this is a good or a bad idea. Samsung accused of stringing along Microsoft. Just, they're just being a tease about Windows Phone 8.
Yeah, this is an interesting story from research house Detweiler Fenton says that Samsung might be screwing with Microsoft's brain. According to Detweiler Fenton's analyst Jeff Johnston, he says our checks indicate that Samsung may be intentionally gobbling up Microsoft's smartphone resources as a strategic move to impede the adoption of Windows Phone 8. He's saying that Samsung insists on receiving extensive engineering support from Microsoft and then gets that help. The whole theory is, while Microsoft is busy helping Samsung, they can't be helping anybody else. Meanwhile, Samsung is twirling its mustache and it's trying to build Tizen OS at the same time. Martin, what do you think of Detweiler Fenton's theory? Could Samsung really be messing with Microsoft, or could they actually make Windows Phone 8 a hit if they wanted to?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah, they certainly could make it a hit if they wanted to. So the question is, you know, just how serious are they? And I have that, I'm a bit skeptical about that theory, to be honest. You know, I think what Samsung's trying to do is keep all of its options open and make sure that it's sort of, you know, across the different platforms that are out there. So, you know, as you said, you know, it's trying to sort of, you know, make overtures to Apple and various, you know, so you can see what they're trying to play out here. So I would be very skeptical about this sort of Machiavellian theory, no matter how good the mustaches are on that illustration.
Now, Tom, Samsung's having this huge event for the Galaxy S4. When the Windows Phone devices are released, I think it's like a press release and people aren't even aware that they exist. Should Samsung be making a bigger deal of these devices?
Samsung's going to do what's in their best interest to do, which is to make Android phones, because Android is the most popular operating system out there. If Windows Phone were the most popular operating system out there and everybody loved it as much as they love Android, Samsung would be making a big deal out of their Windows phones. So I doubt very seriously that Samsung is doing this on purpose to crush Windows Phone, because I don't see what they get out of that. Samsung would like to have multiple operating systems, and they want them all to be strong so they're not at the mercy of one particular operating system. The fact that they're unveiling a big Android phone as their top-of-the-line phone is not because they want Google to have all the power. It's because that's just the conditions of the market right now. So I'm not sure I buy the reasoning here.
Sarah, Samsung makes every style of device for Android. It's like there's a 3.5-inch, there's a 6-inch device, a 7, whatever they want to do. There's only two models of Windows Phone for Samsung Windows Phone 8 devices right now. Do you find that strange at all that they're not trying to make something different?
Well, I mean, like Tom said, they're going where the money is, right? I mean, Android's hot. Everyone equates Samsung with the best experience you can get on Android. Maybe not everybody, but the majority of people do. So that's where you put all your R&D. That's where you give people all the options they could ever want. You know, a variety of sizes and shapes and specs. As far as Windows Phone, I think Samsung is certainly not alone in saying, well, we definitely want to be in that market. But if they're not like flying off the shelves, then why would we expand the line much more than what we already have?
I think Samsung is totally screwing with Microsoft's head, because there was a Windows RT device that was supposed to come out in the United States that got pulled away. They released it in Europe
because they didn't think they were going to sell enough.
Well, of course,
they didn't think it was going to be worth their while. Windows That's not phone, screwing though. With well, Microsoft.
I'm talking about
Microsoft as a whole. They introduced it in Europe. They pulled it from Europe. Then they have this phone. They have these two phones. One's effectively a Galaxy S3 that was running a different operating system. Nobody knows about it. It just seems like
they pulled that RT tablet from Germany, saying that there wasn't enough demand. Though,
oh, because when Android launched,
if there was demand, do you think that they would have pulled it?
When Android launched, nobody knew what it was, and Samsung got on board with it because they didn't have an operating system. They could make anything a hit if they wanted to, because they spend lots of money. They've had lots of record quarters. If they wanted to diversify, I think they could. And we know about Samsung's huge feud with LG for years. So they could really be messing with LG. I mean, there's like a whole vice president who's dedicated to messing with LG because they're rivals.
There's no percentage in messing with Microsoft to get back at LG.
You're tying up resources that LG can't use because Samsung's being catered to.
Right, and Microsoft's just a dupe. They don't know what's going on.
Because their strategy with Windows Phone has been excellent so far.
Right, but they wouldn't notice that that's what Samsung's doing. I don't know. Let's move on to fundamental particle physics.
The easy stuff.
Again? every Thursday.
Actually, this is real quick. According to CERN's latest update, as they dig into all of the mountains of data that the Large Hadron Collider has provided, they're more and more certain that what they have found is in fact a Higgs boson. They're saying it's more and more like a Higgs boson. They're just trying to figure out which model it fits in. Is it the Higgs boson from the standard model, or is it a particle from that's predicted by several other models? Scientists are very careful not to be definitive about this sort of things. This is pretty darn definitive sounding, so it's pretty exciting. And that's your science report.
Dun, dun, dun.
What,
the more you know.
I have no conspiracy theory about how Samsung's tying up all the resources of CERN.
I didn't make up the theory, okay? I'm not Denton, whatever the heck this thing's called. Detweiler Fenton. I don't argue with science, Tom. Science is science. And then I have to research
Windows it. Windows 8 on the universe.
Yeah. Let's see what's on the calendar.
Happy Pie Day, everyone. I was hoping to be eating a pie as I said this, but... I don't know. That didn't magically appear.
Yeah, I know. I blame Chad.
I think you can say it three times.
I blame Chad as well, and maybe one of the interns.
Jeff.
Days are numbered, buddy. Pre-orders for the BlackBerry Z10 are starting today on Verizon. That phone is coming out on March 28th. It's going to cost $200, like the AT&T model, although Verizon has a white version of the phone, if that's your bag. Tomorrow, March 15th, Microsoft is shutting down Messenger.
Odd that there weren't petitions to bring Messenger back.
Oh, I know. Oh, I'm sure there is one somewhere.
I know. Yeah, there probably is.
It's
I
a subreddit say. Somewhere.
Send
in
us
the
all the emails about he the petition.
All right, let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail. This is a combined voicemail, which we usually don't like, but they're actually two really good points. One about how we might use Google Glass, and this guy's a pilot, so he has some experience with heads-up displays. And the other about Jimmy Iovine's secret to a new music service.
Hey, guys. I'm Scott in Hesperia, California. I just wanted to let you guys know I enjoy the show. And in my previous life, I was an Apache pilot. And I used something similar to Google Glass. We had a heads-up display and a night vision FLIR system on our eye all the time. And you sort of did become ambidextrous with your eyes. You would look with your naked eye on the left and through the infrared system on the right with the heads-up display. And so you kind of become ambidextrous. You could use both eyes independently, it seemed like sometimes. But it really was something you get used to. Some people got sick initially. But eventually you just got used to it, and it was great. And the other thing I wanted to address was Jimmy Iovine with Beats. I had seen an interview with him where he said his big niche on the streaming system was going to have to do with curation. He said he knew really well how to curate music and that his groups were really good at that, and that was going to be how they separated their streaming service from the others. All right, thanks. Enjoy the show.
I'd actually heard that about the curation thing, too. I saw that on All Things D. So that is interesting because we're getting to the point where the music is just all there in the most part. So curation becomes the value add that you can provide if you're somebody really smart about it. But it sounded like he was in a helicopter when he's flying. Here's a helicopter pilot. It's like, yeah, you get ambidextrous.
I don't know if you want to be wall-eyed when you have...
Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah, some people got sick at first, but, you know... I don't know if, I mean, for an Apache helicopter pilot, you get sick, it's probably worth it. That's your career. For somebody to buy Google Glass, like, oh, yeah, you'll throw up a few times the first time you use it.
Can't wait for that warning label on there. Might become lazy eyed.
The hell?
This is
sorry, it was a flyover. My apologies.
Oh, yeah.
It's a hella studio.
We got
an email from Rami in Palestine. He says, greetings, TNT crew. In your last show, you discussed Intel providing a pre-alpha of Android 4.2.2. with dual boot, and Tom said he'd like to try dual booting a phone just to see how it is. Well, this is possible on the international Galaxy S2 and S3, thanks to a custom kernel by a developer on XDA forum. It allows having two versions of Android on the same device. I use it on my Galaxy S3 for ROM testing, and it just works. Two different Android builds with completely separated sets of apps and user settings. I find it very useful. But as you said, dual booting is not for everybody. I also don't see it useful for every person. It's just for some special uses. Just my tip to you.
Oh, that's an excellent point. Thanks, Rami, for pointing that out. There are a lot of ways to do dual booting out there, and we'll throw a bunch in our show notes at twit.tv/TNT. There's a dual boot Windows Phone 7 an Android project out there. There's one called Switch Me that dual boots your Android phone with two different versions of Android running. So, yeah, there's lots of ways to try this out. In fact, Lifehacker has a couple of good articles about this as well. So thanks for that. Thanks for reminding us of that, Rami. Appreciate that. And that is it for the show. Martin Giles, thank you, my friend, for joining us again. Always a pleasure to have you on. Let folks know where they can find your work at The Economist.
Thank you. Aye, aye, Captain.
It's theeconomist.com, right?
Theeconomist.com. Yeah, www.economist.com. And at Martin Giles on Twitter.
At Martin Giles. Follow him on Twitter. Folks, you can find our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. If you'd like to let us know what stories you would like us to keep an eye on, you can vote things up, vote things down, make some comments. It all helps us figure out our show each and every day. Find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And you can give us a call, leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow. It's Friday already.
Yeah.
Kitchen will be here. See you then.